Minnesota's Senator Walter Mondale, on a fact-finding tour of South Asia, took off from the capital city of Cambodia, headed for neighboring Vietnam. The little hostess on the Air Vietnam plane, struggling a bit with her English pronunciation, made this announcement. After 1 hour of fright, she said, we will arrive in Saigon. It was not an hour of fright, literally, but when we landed an hour later at Tan Sanut Airport in Saigon, we quickly learned that we had descended into a country where fright and terror have become a way of life. The city of Saigon is a churning mass of humanity. When the French occupied it as their colonial capital, Saigon was a stately city of 500,000, the Paris of the Orient, they called it. Today, its population has been swollen by hundreds of thousands of refugees fleeing the Viet Cong terror. Added to this, the vast influx of the American military, and Saigon now approaches the population of Chicago. Its narrow streets are tangled with hundreds of thousands of bikes and motorbikes, rickshaws, carts, jeeps, and massive military trucks. Traffic is chaotic, particularly during daylight hours. After dark, tension settles over the city. It's usually just after dark or just after dawn that the terrorists strike. They struck twice during the week we were in Saigon, and another attempted bombing was foiled when police seized a terrorist with 250 pounds of plastic explosive. He said he had planned to blow up the U.S. Navy dispensary the same night we had visited there. The Viet Cong were everywhere, in the rice paddies, in the jungles, in the underground tunnels and redoubts, in the highlands, in the delta, and even in the streets of Saigon. We'll tell you more about them later in this broadcast. Upon his arrival in Saigon, Senator Mondale went into a briefing with General William Westmoreland, the U.S. commander for Vietnam. He told the Minnesota senator that he would like to give this advice to Americans in Vietnam. Here is an American yardstick, he would say. Don't use it in Asia. It was good advice, as we learned during our movement through the country. It may be that much of the confusion in America over the seeming contradictions of the war stem from this basic lack of understanding of the Asian mind. On January 5th, Senator Mondale observed his 38th birthday. By arising early, pulling an olive drab army fatigues and combat boots, and boarding a helicopter at Tan Sanut. The helicopter is the modern workhorse of the war in Vietnam, replacing to some extent the ubiquitous jeep, whose movements are somewhat restricted by Viet Cong control of the roads. The senator flew to the headquarters of the 1st Infantry Division, scraped out of Viet Cong territory about 20 miles northwest of Saigon. General Harold Seaman briefed the senator on the disposition of his troops and their supporting units, but he made no mention of the impending Operation Crimp, which began 4 days later. The senator asked many questions. How long will it take us to clear out the Viet Cong? Are their numbers growing faster than ours? Do we have any cadres as effective as theirs? The general responded to the senator with specifics. It would take a long time, at least a year, to defeat the VC, as the Viet Cong are called. At the moment, the enemy forces are increasing faster than ours, and their cadres, especially in the villages which they control, are much more effective than ours. The senator asked the general's opinion as to whether the victory would be hastened if we should double our force of 190,000 men this year. General Seaman said emphatically, this would help. But the war in Vietnam, this puzzling war, is not just troops and planes and firepower. It's also a war of political ideas. Communism versus democracy. In Vietnam, that side of the war is known as civic action. On the civic action battlefront, the war is not going very well for us. One of the military men who is engaged in civic action is Sergeant Reuben Schallenberger of Starbuck, Minnesota. We asked him about it.
We're talking to Gordon Schallenberg here, Sergeant. You're from Starbuck?
Starbuck, Minnesota, right, sir.
And did you say you've been in the Army for 17 years, Gordon?
Yes, sir.
And what's your present assignment here?
I'm Operations NCO of G5, sir. They handle the civic action
for the
1st Infantry Division.
1st Infantry Division has seen a good deal of action, hasn't it?
Yes, sir, they certainly have, and they're doing a wonderful job, of course.
Can you say where they've been in operations?
Well, from the civic action standpoint, sir, we've handled throughout the Third Corps zone here, And we have approximately 60 projects going on right now helping the Vietnamese people to help themselves. Now building this, schools, etc.
In other words, when you move in and secure an area, you then try to get it back on its feet, operating normally as soon as possible.
Right, sir. Right, this is true.
And this is considered a deterrent, I presume, for the Viet Cong or for those who might have been sympathizing with the Viet Cong to continue.
Right, sir. We try to bring anybody that is on the borderline, we try to get them back in the right channels and support the South Vietnamese government. It gets them back on their feet and gives them something to do and proves to them that the South Vietnamese government is indeed hopeful of their welfare.
But not only the military is involved in civic action, that side of the war has been taken over largely by civilian agencies. There are many of these, some working at cross purposes, and together they form a crossword puzzle of alphabetic bureaucracy. There's the U.S. Operations Mission, known as USOM. There's the Joint U.S. Public Affairs Operation called JUSPO. There's our worldwide AID program and others. Even the military have alphabet names. Our military establishment is known as MACV, Military Assistance for Vietnam. The South Vietnamese Army is known as ARVN, for Army of the Republic of Vietnam. And the North Vietnamese Army is called PAVN, for People's Army of Vietnam. The Viet Cong are simply known as VC. It's the job of USOM and JUSPO to go to the villages and try to help the villagers to help themselves. They offer to finance the cost of building new schools or hospitals or wells or water systems or to help introduce advanced farming methods. In this way, we hope to convince the villagers that we're honestly interested in their welfare and are prepared to help put the country back on its feet after generations of war and destruction. Senator Mondale read USOM's monthly reports on this activity, but the reports are discouraging. When we seem to be making progress in a village, the VC move in and spoil the good work through terror or any other means. The Viet Cong pressure on the villagers is increasing, but so is ours, and in at least one instance, the villagers have tipped off American troops when Viet Cong were concealed in their village. We were told that victory will finally come when the villagers finally turn against the Viet Cong. Judging from what we saw and heard, it seemed true what Secretary McNamara had reported, that we're not winning the war yet, but at least we seem to have stopped losing it. All the military people with whom Senator Mondale talked agreed that the Viet Cong are good fighters. They'll stand and fight if they think they have a good chance of winning, or they'll fade away into the jungle when they're convinced they can't win. They have a healthy respect for American firepower, and it can be said that the terrific firepower brought to bear against the VC has proved decisive in all major engagements so far. But what the VC lacks in firepower, he tries to offset by cunning and treachery. Private First Class John Fank of Bloomkest, Minnesota, who convoys supplies through VC territory to some of our outposts, told us about some of the Viet Cong tricks.
This is Private First Class John Fank, and where are you from, John?
I'm from Bloomkest, Minnesota. I do mostly convoy escorts and gate duty.
Now, this 1st Infantry Division, I understand, has been doing a good deal of convoy work, supplying units in the field to the north.
That's right. We go out about twice a day to go on a convoy.
Now, what kind of problems do you run into? I understand the Viet Cong have some neat tricks to keep you from getting where you want to go.
Yeah, well, mostly they got Claymore mines, but I've only been here almost a month now, and we haven't had anything happen yet.
Is that right? Now, the Claymore mine is a Chinese mine, isn't it?
That's, I don't know if it is or not. It's just metal, scrap metal, and everything else piled on top of it, and they detonating it off.
They detonate it and blow the scrap at you, is
yeah.
that it? The Jeeps carry a bar across the front, a vertical bar mounted on the bumper and ahead of the radiator. What's the reason for that?
This is to cut wire. They usually string wire across the road a lot of times to get you by the throat or head, and that'll cut the wire so that you don't have any problems with that.
I understand that when they discovered you were doing this, they worked up another little trick. One of the Jeep drivers was telling me about the Viet Cong now attach grenades to each end of the wire so that when the wire is hooked on that bar on a Jeep passing by, the grenades swing around behind and catch the Jeep from the sides. You haven't encountered that?
No, we haven't encountered that yet.
To counter the VC tactics, some American Jeeps used on convoy are now equipped with grenade throwers. These mechanical launchers mounted on each side automatically spray both sides of the roads with grenades when the jeep runs into ambush. In addition to the Claymore mines mentioned by Private Fank, the VC have developed a vicious booby trap known as the Bear Trap. It's a hinged piece of wood with sharp spikes on either end. When a foot soldier steps on this in the grass, the spiked ends snap up, driving the spikes into the leg and often smashing the bone. Mines and booby traps so far have accounted for 34% of American injuries and 22% of American deaths. From the 1st Division headquarters, Senator Mondale hopped by helicopter to the 2nd Brigade of the 2nd Division, dug in at the Lacay rubber plantation near Zion. In the shade of the rubber trees there, Major Herbert Chandler, the executive officer, pointed to his map in the headquarters tent and said,
"This battalion occupies the eastern edge of it, and you're located just about where this 2 is now. This is the battalion command post, and we occupy the eastern edge here. There are two other battalions within the perimeter. We've had two major actions since we've been here, one on the 12th of November at Bao Bang here, which is about 10 kilometers. Each of these squares is 1 kilometer, about 10 kilometers north of here. Our mission was to open the road and clear the road so that an Arvin unit could pass through to the Michelin Plantation.
Major, I understand just this morning one of the officers was badly injured, and one of the enlisted men was also...
Yes, sir, we're extending our perimeter in this area here, and in order to extend it, we're cutting down some of the jungle, and in this jungle growth, there was a booby trap which was exploded by these people moving through there. No matter how careful you are, we still have, in the jungle out in front of us, we still get these casualties occasionally.
The booby trap and the landmine are their most effective weapons.
Yes, sir. It's very hard to guard against those. No matter how alert you are, there are always some that you can't find.
And I see you have three weapons here, and the caption says, "Here hang three of the many VC weapons." Where were those made? Do we know?
These are Chinese manufacturers, sir. They're Russian model, but there are some differences between these and the Russian model. So they're Chinese manufacturer. You can notice these weapons were captured at Bao Bang, and they're not old World War I and World War II surplus. These are of recent manufacture. They're in very good shape. They
are
were
they
maintained
good weapons?
And kept. These are good weapons, yes, sir,
they're
and they're
automatic.
Maintained well. They're all automatic. Almost all the weapons we captured there were automatic. They put out a heavy volume of fire. This could present some problems because when you have a weapon which fires at a high rate as this, then, of course, you must have a high rate of ammunition resupply.
Can they manufacture that down here, or do they have to bring it down from Vietnam? North Vietnam.
I'm sure something like this would have to be manufactured in a fairly fixed industrial establishment. These are not crude weapons.
So they bring that down from North Vietnam?
Probably
from China, yes, or
probably all the way from China. And as far as we're concerned, this will pose a problem to them if we can cut their resupply route.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a definite difference between the weapons that they are using this year and the ones that they were using last year, the captured weapons that they were using last year. And this indicates that they feel as though they have a secure economic base. And our mission now, of course, is to try and destroy that base.
And they apparently are acting as though they've got a secure supply line, don't they, that'll keep them supplied with this type of equipment and the ammunition to...
That's right. But now this is not the complete weapons that we captured. In this Bao Bang battle, and later on this battalion participated in a Nam Mot battle on the 5th of December, in these they had a mixture of weapons, some... United States Browning automatic rifles, for example. They captured 10 of those at Bao Bang. And American carbines, 30 caliber carbines. But it indicates that they are going more and more to this and indicates that they feel as though they can resupply the ammunition for this.
Both of these units that we ran into were very well-trained, well-disciplined, well-equipped units. Each man had an automatic weapon. He had a cartridge belt, a canteen, a poncho, his own little bag of rice. So these weren't just poor irregulars that were recruited out of the countryside here. These were well-trained and well-equipped regular forces.
They were Viet Cong, though. They weren't from North Vietnam.
Well, we're not certain of that. So some indications in here are that they were North Vietnamese in them. They were large men, larger in stature than the southern Vietnamese, and they were darker complected. We had some reports that they were Montagnards from the north.
Do your men move out in to search for the enemy?
Yes, sir.
Do you move out daily or just...
We have daily security missions out. Some are deeper than others. On this particular mission, we were out for several days. We were attacked on our second night out here, and we were out for two or three days after that, clearing it. We always have some kind of security around the perimeter here to safeguard the perimeter, and normally we are out on operations throughout our area of responsibility.
On the 12th of November, this unit had its first experience in combat.
Yes, sir.
We read back home that... that the officers are very, very pleased with the quality of our fighting men. Would you concur in that judgment?
Yes, sir. They've been magnificent so far. Our squad leaders, our non-commissioned officers, our officers, and the private on the line have fought heroically in each of these cases. And the fact that they were so well-trained and so dedicated to their jobs resulted in a fairly low number of casualties for our side. I think if they had been subject to panic, if they hadn't been so well trained, things might have been different for us. But this has saved us this has helped us greatly at both times, and has really caused the enemy to have severe casualties inflicted upon him.
Major Chandler's outfit also was involved in the big Operation Crimp, a search and destroy mission in the Viet Cong's so-called Iron Triangle, on the weekend following our visit there. Next stop on Senator Mondale's birthday was at 3rd Corps headquarters at Benoit Air Base. As guests of the 3rd Battalion, Senator Mondale and I had lunch with the officers and several Minnesota men in that outfit. We were about to leave when the mess sergeant came in beaming with a colorful birthday cake.
Senator Mondale celebrated his 38th birthday by making a swing around several of the military bases here in Vietnam. And when he sat down for lunch at the 3rd Battalion headquarters, he was presented with a beautiful birthday cake which says, "Land of the Vikings, happy birthday, Senator Mondale."
And Minnesota in big type here.
And tell them what's in the center, the centerpiece there. Senator.
It says, "Happy birthday, Senator Mondale," and then they've got a Vikings headdress. And I was asking the colonel here how good their intelligence was, how well they could find out what the enemy was doing. And I must say they're really great, because I didn't tell anybody it was my birthday, but they had the cake ready anyway.
They're on the ball.
That's right, that's right.
It's just beautifully done.
Before leaving Benoit, the senator had a private briefing with American units which serve as military advisors with the Arvin forces. He also was given the big picture of the Air Force activity in Vietnam by some of the officers who fly the Phantom jets in close support of American and Vietnamese forces on the ground. He'd been told in several Army briefings that without the help from the air, many of our victories might have been defeats. As we were taking off from Benoit airstrip, Senator Mondale looked at a group of the pilots and said, "Look how cheerful they are, as though they didn't realize that in another few minutes they may be in real peril." To this, the military aide who traveled with the senator replied, "They just don't think of the danger, sir." Then he added, "You're in the same danger, you know, but you're not thinking about it either." We flew north from Benoit to Cameron Bay on the China Sea coast, where the Americans are staging one of those miracles of hurry-up construction. The inshore water is deep enough there for ocean-going vessels. A dozen vessels rode at anchor in the harbor, and several were tied up at two piers newly constructed on the sandy island. It was this natural harbor that shielded the Russian Imperial Fleet for a time before it was destroyed in the Sea of Japan by the Japanese fleet 60 years ago. Now the Americans are using it as another port of entry through which massive amounts of supply are being funneled to support our war in Vietnam. There is no railroad, and the road transport is risky at best. So a fabulously smooth runway of aluminum panels has been laid on top of the shifting sand of that barren island, and most of the supplies are flown out by air. It's a marvelously efficient operation, and Senator Mondale was obviously impressed. He also was impressed by the high morale of Minnesota men he talked to at Cameron Bay, and by another birthday cake that they presented to him there. Senator Mondale took to the air again on Friday, flying by jet to see the action in the advanced areas of the north. We landed first at Pleiku, where the commanding general of the 1st Cavalry Division flew us over the area by helicopter, pointing out the areas in which the 1st Cav defeated the VC in a series of recent operations. Then we hill-a-hop to a highland outpost where an artillery position overlooked Manyang Pass. That's the place where the French Mobile Force 100 was ambushed and wiped out by the Viet Minh in 1954. And we came in for a landing beside the battery. We could see the rows of graves on the hillside where the 3,000 Frenchmen lie buried. We spoke about the immense firepower of our forces and noted at Manyang that the riflemen carried the powerful new AR-15 rifles, which the Viet Cong fearfully call the Black Stick. As always, we found Minnesota men in this outfit, too. And as the wind on the hilltop rumbled in our microphone, Senator Mondale and I talked with Joe Poplinski of Minneapolis.
This is probably the coldest spot in Vietnam, wouldn't you say?
This is pretty cold. We're awful high here, right up in the highest portions.
But you have to be up here in order to command that pass down below.
That's right.
Now, you're all riflemen, aren't you?
Right.
And you're supporting the artillery that's up here.
Right. We're security for the artillery.
Have you had any brushes with the VC up here yet?
No, they haven't came up here yet. We're in a good position right here. On the sweep operations and clearing things like this, we've run into them.
What do you think of them?
I don't like them. Get rid of them all again.
Do you think things are going well here?
I think so. It appears to me that things have slowed down a little bit here from when we first came over here. There doesn't seem to be too much as much activity.
Now you're with this famous First Cav that has the mobile helicopters. Have you found these very effective in this area?
I think they're great. I was with the 11th Air Assault for a year before they switched over, and I've seen all the operations they can go on, and that's what's happening. We couldn't do it over here, I don't think, without the helicopters.
I wish the folks back home could see the terrain that our Minnesotans have to walk over here. High hills and heavy foliage, and you never know where the VC are, and I think they'd get a better picture of why these helicopters are so effective. And I've just finished talking to all our Minnesotans here, and they're all swear by the use of the helicopter.
Do you fellas have any feelings at all about being at such a distance from headquarters base or from the nearest strong position?
No, it doesn't bother me. I don't know. I like it out here better than I do back in base camp. No details out here.
It's an easier life, huh?
Right, all you have to do is get shot at and shoot back. It's not too hard.
Very good. And what's your name again?
Joe Poplinski.
From?
Minneapolis.
From Minneapolis.
As we mentioned, this was an artillery outpost commanding a pass in the mountains near Anquet, through which Highway 13 passes from east to west. There were six 105-millimeter howitzers there, supported by jeep-mounted recoilless rifles and by rocket-firing helicopters. Their mission was to keep the snipers out of the woods on the surrounding mountainsides. I opened my mic again near the fire control officer. You'll hear the recoilless rifle in action.
That's the best cure for these little snipers who try to infiltrate that we have.
Those are recoilless rifle shots. These are shot from recoilless rifles mounted on jeeps. They sail off into the surrounding hills, and they set up quite a fire. Apparently, Colonel, when these land, they have a considerable flash?
Oh, yes, sir. They have quite a bit of fragmentation, and it also has a lot of penetrating power because the snipers try to dig in on the side of the hill and camouflage themselves. So it discourages them, and we have had very little sniping on this from this position.
Now you can hear the fire control officer as he directs the salvos from the battery of heavy howitzers.
6-6, drop, 5-0, 5-4, effect, over.
Another broadside is about to be fired here. Now we'll wait for the impact on the other side.
Those were air bursts over a selected area. These were phosphorus shots, the last ones that went over. Is that what's known as firing for effect?
Right, sir. That is firing for effect with all six guns. We normally use two in adjustment, and we fire for effect with six.
Now, these are anti-personnel, strictly, aren't they?
Yes, sir. That is strictly anti-personnel.
And if there had been somebody in that area, as there very well might be, presumably by now he would have been struck by fragments, at least, by one or another of these shots you put in.
That's correct, sir. That's correct.
Thank you.
Roger, we've got a sniper on the right rear in vicinity of the big tree in the beaten-up area. Give me piece number two, action rear, over.
This is known as firing into the tree line, creating tree bursts. In other words, the shell bursts in the tree tops and scatters fragments, of course, in all directions. Those four rounds went in there one after another and were all right on target, and fragments into the area where there are suspected Viet Cong snipers.